That's it. We're on.
We're on and we're off.
I made a list of things. Anyway, do carry on. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Well, we were talking about the first time I met Teresa Blinken.
That's right.
Personally, to know her. And it was at this meeting. It was held in the old Essex Hall in the Strand. It was a meeting of the central branch of the WSPU, of which we were all then members, in order to instruct the delegates for the annual conference. But when we arrived for the meeting, we found the atmosphere in the little hall was very strained. And there were three on the platform, Mrs. Pankhurst in the chair, Teresa Billington, no, not Teresa Billington, Mrs. Howe Martin, her friend, and Mrs. Despard. And when the time came to open the proceedings, Mrs. Pankhurst simply got up and said, practically, this is what she said, if not in her own word, she said, the constitution of the WSPU is not worth the paper it is written on. I have torn it up. And in future, I will have no one on the committee of the WSPU who is not in absolute accord with myself. Now, you know, that if you had any ideas about democratic constitution for any kind of society or association, it was a lot to take that. And there was a distinct feeling against. In fact, the majority of people there were against the Pankhurst idea of turning it into an autocratic organization. But Mrs. Pankhurst persisted, and of course Christabel solidly behind her. I don't think the Pettigrews had come in by this time, but when the branches all up and down the country, it was a national organization, and the branches were consulted, and about half and half were divided. I think the majority were in favour of our view, that it should continue as a constitutional society. But Pankhurst were very active, and they said not only would it be an autocratic society, but it would be not a national society anymore. It would be just a society, one group, and that any branches that agreed with them must be separate societies. Whereas the people who agreed for the constitutional government wanted to have a national organization and did have it. Well, Mrs. Billington Greig was extremely active in promoting that the establishment of the Women's Freedom League, because she had been the first of our group in any way, the first to be associated with the Pankhurst. I expect you know all this. In Manchester, before they came to London, when they were all in the Independent Labour Party.
Yes.
And they knew all about the constitutional management of associations. It had a good deal of experience, principally in Labour Party organisations. And Mrs. Pankhurst, and perhaps Christopher too, seemed to have the opinion that Teresa was a troublemaker. Teresa was ambitious. Teresa was very clever and would soon be the one who was running the whole organization. They were very suspicious of Teresa because of her capacity. She was a very able woman.
Do you think she was ambitious, actually? Do you think that was her objective, to take over the...
I think she was a bit ambitious, yes. Mm. But I don't think it was so much that she wanted to capture the society. I just think she wanted to have room for her own activities, which she felt herself capable of giving and was, because she was by far the outstanding speaker that we had in the Freedom League.
What, even better than Mrs. Despard?
Oh, much better, in the sense that her speeches were more logical. Mrs. Despard's speeches appeared more to the sentiment and, you know, the work of a feeling and sympathy for the poor and that sort of thing. But Teresa's were logical speeches. And when we talk about her speaking, she was she was an orator, really. She was an extremely good speaker. But I remember one occasion which always struck me as showing the value of concentration in public speaking. It was at the Queen's Hall. We had a meeting there, and Theresa Billington was one of the speakers, probably the principal speaker, and she was in the full flood of her oratory, making a splendid speech, when the clock outside the Queen's Hall struck, broke her concentration. She stopped dead, looked rather dumb, and then sat down.
That's extraordinary.
She was just so concentrated on what she was saying that when it was broken, she had nothing.
What was she like as a speaker, actually? Can you describe her to me?
She was very impressive as a speaker. And she had this... you've got some pictures of her, actually.
I have seen pictures. I'd love to look at those later, if I may, or now, if it's
convenient.
I only
have two. I don't have a... It has a postmark, but no date. Anyway, it says on here... Mrs. Billington Greig, whose photo appears on the other side, is going to have a debate on Monday next at Caxton Hall, Westminster, with Miss Bonfield, that was Margaret, on the suffrage question. I have tickets, sixpence and 1 shilling. Can you take one or two? I guarantee you an intellectual treat. Emmy Lawson.
That's splendid.
And this is a Mrs. Desborough.
Oh, yes. That's was a striking person, wasn't
yeah,
she? May I read on the back?
Yes, certainly. That has to do with the same matter, to correct something.
Oh, yes.
I made a mistake, it says, didn't it?
On Tuesday, yes. Yes. Huh? Well. Do tell me, Miss Lawson, I mean, did she use her hands much in speaking? I mean, did she...
To a certain amount of gesture, yes. Certain amount of gesture. But she had a very impressive personality. And she was a large woman, you know, large and handsome, with a lot of fair hair plaited and crowned on the top of her head.
What sort of
voice?
But
of course, she changed a good deal in her personality when she got married.
Did she?
I thought so.
Did she?
Yeah.
How?
Well, she was very much in love with her husband to start with, and it naturally diversified her interests. She was much more liable to stay over in Scotland with him than to come down and take care of our business at the other end. I don't say she persistently did that, but she occasionally did it. She didn't put suffrage first after she was married. That was my impression of her. And her great friend, who loved and admired her so much, was Mrs. Hal Morton.
Oh, yes.
I don't know whether you have seen any of her.
I've come across her, but
that
I'd like
is
to
her
see
in her.
To ask you, just go, take you back to that meeting where Mrs. Pankhurst was tearing up the Constitution.
Yeah.
What was the reaction in the audience when she said?
Shock. Mainly shock. I was shocked to the marrow. We were young and enthusiastic, and we thought the Union was going to be a great democratic movement. And also, we were shocked at the thought that although we were making such a tremendous agitation to get the vote, we were not considered worthy of a vote in our own society. I think that was one of the main ideas. Come in. The meeting broke up with that kind of shocked feeling that something dreadful had happened.
But were there interruptions or interjections?
Oh yes, there was a lot of questioning from the floor.
How did Mrs. Pankhurst deal with it, actually?
Very haughtily. Very haughtily. She was not inclined to... Yes, please, ma'am. Is Mrs. Blake coming in?
No.
She's not in?
No, she's gone back.
I see.
Yes. Did you take milk and sugar?
Very kind of you. It's just a little milk, please. Thank you very much. No sugar. Do you mind talking while we're eating?
Not at all.
So there were some gasps, were there, or cries of
shock?
Oh,
there was a lot of interruption, a lot of shouts from the floor, which Mrs. Pankhurst managed to subdue. Mrs. Despard looking as though she was boiling with anger, you know, and trying to hold back her real feelings. Mrs. Hal Morton very worried and wondering what Teresa was going to say about it all, because she was up in Scotland. She didn't stay regularly in London. She lived in Scotland and came up and down.
She was an organiser.
She was the organiser. Mm.
Mm. That's a marvellous meeting to have been at, actually. It's a major event in the whole history of the movement, isn't it?
Oh. Well, we thought it was. It was a big split, because when they got to the further on, much further on, and they got to what they called the Pethick-Lawrence split, it wasn't really a split in that sense. It was simply an expulsion. They turned them out.
Yes.
And they couldn't be a split, because they hadn't no one to consult except themselves.
In the end, they formed the United Suffragists, didn't they? They formed an organisation, as a sort of alternative to the WSPU, the Pethick-Lawrences, didn't they? But only...
They didn't really.
Didn't really get very far.
They didn't really even try to do it. They were determined not to make it appear that they had broken away in any way. Mm. He did run the paper for a while.
That's right, yes. Votes for Women.
Votes for Women.
Yes. But could I go right back, Miss Lawson, and ask you about your childhood and your background and how you got involved in the movement? And may I ask you, you know, where you come from and your family background?
We're North Country. I was born in Bishop Bramuth, which is a village in Durham and is now a part of Sunderland. And if I tell you, it was 94 years ago. It's a long time, isn't it?
I wouldn't have believed it.
And my father was a practicing solicitor. My brother was a practicing solicitor. My niece was a practicing solicitor. I alone was excluded, because at that time there was no getting in. All the doors were shut and locked and barred.
Mm. And your mother?
I had a great interest in law. I would very much like to practice law. I did law under Professor Morgan at the London School of Economics. And I did it whenever I could, but it was sort of offbeat instruction I was getting, because I wasn't accepted anywhere.
I
was just an oddment that blew in.
Yes.
And when I had to choose what I would do for an occupation, the only other thing I was any good at all was mathematics. So I did a bit of higher mathematics, and then I did mechanics. And then I got into my own line of business. I became the managing director of a firm of machinery manufacturers whose machines are used far and wide all over the country today. And the telephone directories are done on the one thing. They are big fat books, you know.
What is the machine?
Binding. Book binding. Taking the flat sheets, printed sheets.
Did you actually learn to be a bookbinder yourself?
Well, I learned a lot about it, because I couldn't learn on the engineering side, because I couldn't get in anywhere.
The trade union.
Even the editor of engineering wrote to the society to try and get some special consideration, but no one would listen to it. They wouldn't think of having a girl in. And well, it was a long time ago, you know.
Yes.
And I got a clerical job in an engineering firm whose main works were in America. And in order to get any kind of mechanical experience at all, I had to go there. And my boss, who was the vice president of the company in America, he said, "You go to America. You go to our plant up at Champlain." So I went there and I learned all I could of practical layout during the time I was at the Sheraton, at Champlain, up on the state of New York.
I'm just trying to think when this would be. Would this be in the Edwardian period when you were doing
it? Yes, it was immediately following the suffrage.
Was it really? I see. So after the First World War? was it?
Oh, no, before.
Before the war?
Well, definitely before.
Yes.
You see, the suffrage was from, roughly, for me, was, I suppose, from 1902 to 1914, and then a certain amount of push to get the younger women in.
Could you tell me a bit more about your family? You haven't said anything about your mother yet. What did she...
My mother had no professional occupation. She was a very good mother. She had a large family, 3 sons and 3 daughters, a Victorian family. I can show you a picture of them, an oil painting, but not me, I wasn't there, and an elder sister who hadn't been born. But the family is there, and it's a very interesting picture. It's a bit of Victoriana, you know, and a family of six was quite ordinary then. It was considered a smallish family.
And in fact, she had 8 in all in the end, did she?
No, she had 6.
6 in all. I see.
There are only 4 in the picture.
I see. Yes. Mm. Yes. So, how did she spend her time? And was she just running the house? Presumably, had a lot of service.
She was just running the house and 6 children, and she had very delicate health. She was not strong, but she never failed in any respect where she was required to be active. She was always on the spot.
How many servants did she have to look after?
Oh, we had quite a lot of servants. We had quite a lot of servants, and we went this summer. We went to Scotland on holiday, and we stopped at the town, and we went to Bishop Wimbledon. And Mrs. Blake, my friend, took some pictures of the house in which I was born. It's just the same today.
Is it really?
It had been acquired by the local council. And it's now used as a technical residential school for teachers.
So it was a big house, was it?
Fairly big.
Mm. How many servants did you have, Miss Lawson? Do you
well,
remember?
Now I'll tell you what. We had a cook. We had a housemaid. We had a parlourmaid. 3. Excellent. That's enough. Very fattening for me, you know. I eat a lot of salt because I don't get any exercise. That's 3. And we had a sort of nanny, 4. And we had a daily governess, 5. And then, of course, people came in to do the laundry and that sort of thing. There was a good deal of day work in those days because so many things were done at home which are now done outside.
Like sort of making jam and, because all the gardening presumably would be done by gardeners, would it?
We had a day gardener. We didn't have one regularly paid. He came one day a week or something like that.
I see, yes. So did your mother have time for anything except housework, really?
She was interested in politics, particularly in the women's liberals.
Was she?
She was a liberal.
Your father was a liberal as well, was he? Mm. So, what did she do? She went down to London to meetings and things like that a bit, did she?
Yeah, she went to county meetings. She was president of the local society. But apart from liberalism and a chapel, they were nonconformists.
What sort?
Wesleyans.
Were they? No form of Methodist. They actually were Wesleyans, were they?
Wesleyan Methodists.
Were they? Yes.
Well, Wesleyans split, didn't they?
They did, yes.
From the Church of England and joined with the Methodists.
Made your second cup of tea, have you?
She hasn't had her first, actually. I think I must stop talking.
Is it to spoil the record, wouldn't it?
No. Did your mother do any charitable work at all?
Just through the church, mainly. Mainly through the church. But she was not a public worker in any more than the ordinary sense that the mistress of a big house would be.
Mm. It must have been unusual for the mistress of the big house to have been a Wesleyan, wasn't it, at that time?
I didn't think about it very much at the time.
You'd think that the head of the big house would be Anglican, wouldn't you?
But I know that in this town, this place where we live, the church, they were exactly like the Church of England. They built a church which was exactly like the Church of England, and their service was just the same.
I see.
I don't know why they were not with the Church of England.
Very interesting, yes. So it really was, in a way, the established religion locally. Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Why was she a liberal, do you think?
Because the family was liberal. They'd been liberal for years. And, of course, that was the age of liberalism.
Oh, yes.
It was until the Gadsden period.
What was your grandfather? Your grandmother. What did they do? Were they liberals as well and Wesleyans?
The same type. Mm. The same type, but my paternal grandfather built ships.
Did he?
Wooden ships.
Did he?
In the days before they had iron ships. And my maternal grandfather was the master of a ship who went hither and thither with cargoes all over the world.
I can see how your grandparents met then. what was your mother's name, her maiden name?
Lawson.
Your mother's name?
Lawson.
Was it really? And your father's
name? They were no relation to each other.
Good heavens, how extraordinary.
Very awkward. And furthermore, both the mothers-in-law were Lawsons, you see. And in course of time, one had an accident, and one came to stay with us for a month when after her husband died, and she stayed 25 years. I think that's a record mother-in-law's visit. And the other one lived on by herself in our own home, but later had an accident, broke her leg, and she was brought to our home too. So there were three Mrs. Austin in the house. But the two old ladies never could get accustomed to calling each other by their Christian names. They were very formal. You know, Mrs. Dawson, have you seen my spectacles? No, Mrs. Dawson, I didn't, I think. And then the other Mrs. Dawson downstairs, who tried to keep out of the arguments. It was very confusing.
How were you brought up? You had a governess, did you? And a nanny?
We had a governess and a nanny, and we were... They didn't think it was necessary for girls to have very much. I think my parents were very enlightened, really. I think my father was, particularly. And my father came home to lunch, so that we all sat round the table at lunch. And he was there, and my mother was there, and it was a whole family gathering, and the conversation was general. And right from the time we were 5 or 6 years old, we were joining in the conversation. The happenings of the day. It was quite a good education in itself. But we used to talk about all sorts of subjects. I remember being very humiliated once when I was asked in what county Birmingham was. And I said it was in Lancashire. Oh dear. You see, I never forgot that. It was in Warwickshire, and I know it to this day, and nobody will ever get me to say anything different.
But you talked about politics and
everything. Oh, a lot about politics. One occasion I remember very distinctly now. In those days, if a man in Parliament was given a governmental position, he had to go back to his constituency for a by-election. That was it. That was the routine. He had to be re-elected before he took his office. That isn't true today.
No.
But in those days, it happened that someone had been nominated for a government position and he was going to have a by-election. And one of my elder brothers at the table said it was because he... what reason did he give now? He gave a reason that he... quite different from what was said. I said that the reason, I was about 8, I think. I said the reason is he has to be re-elected because he's been given an office. But that was right. And
day
you know, with that sort of little things coming up from day to day and being discussed around the table, it gave us quite an adult outlook.
What about your education, Miss Lawson? I mean, you had a governess to start.
My own education was really a mess. In this sense, that I had a governess, so I was about 12. And then I went to the high school until I was 16.
Which high school is that?
In Sandbourne.
Oh, yes.
And then I came to London. I was supposed to be finished with my schooling at 16. But I knew, and my parents knew, that there were sad gaps in my education that must be tended to. So I went to various places for instruction, day schools here in London. One of them was the University Tutorial College in Red Lion Square, and one of the tutors was Wells.
H.G. Wells?
H.G.
Goodness.
Yeah. He was on mathematics mania. And I did mathematics there, and I did French at another college, and I went to several different courses at the School of Economics and sort of filled up the gaps as best we could. And then I got this job.
As editor of The Vote, you mean?
Oh, no, that wasn't a job. That was all voluntary.
Yes, I see.
I never had a job for the suffrage.
I see.
I was never paid. But I did the work full time, really.
Did you? Which was the job you got then?
Well, the job which I had all my life.
Your engineering?
Yeah. And I went to... Now, what year did I first go to America?
This was managing director, was it?
I was managing director for 20 years. And chairman, in addition, for 21 years. And then the rest of the time was the period of my cadetship, my apprenticeship.
And what did you start at?
I was 50 years in the company.
Were you really? What was your first position then?
It was a kind of typing job.
Was it really?
And then I got to be secretary to the vice president of the company. And from then on, I went straight forward.
What's the company's name, Mr.
It's the Sheridan Machinery Company Limited.
Sheraton or?
Sheridan.
Sheridan, I see.
And it has been incorporated with the Harris Intertype Company of Slough.
I see.
When I retired, having no heir, we decided that was the best thing to do, to accept this takeover bid. And it's now run, and all the Sheridan machines are sold by the Harris Intertype Company.
So when you started off your suffrage work, you were already in employment as a sort of...
In a very junior sort of position. In fact, I was earning enough to have to pay income tax.
Were you really?
I was a tax resister.
Were you really? Goodness, I should ask you about that as well. You're really talking marvellously. do have your cake. I'll give you a bean.
Was she really?
At Essex Hall.
She did the protest at Bermondsey, wasn't it?
Yes, Bermondsey
ballot box thing. Yes, yes.
Of course, the best protest the Freedom League ever did, I think, was the House of Commons, the grill. When Muriel Matters went to the House of Commons, chained herself to the grill of the ladies' gallery and expected to speak about 10 minutes, instead of which she had to speak about 3/4 of an hour. And then the house adjourned, you know.
Yes.
They couldn't get her out. She was chained and they rushed about. Finally they got her out with the grill attached. And in later years, the Minister of Works presented the grill to us in the Suffragette Fellowship as one of our trophies, and it's now included in the Suffragette Museum.
Is it really? Where is the Suffragette Museum?
The London Museum.
Oh, I know. I didn't realise that. Because I've seen all the manuscripts.
They have there. A section for it, but they've been so pushed about.
Mm.
And they're now in course of moving, I think.
Mm. What was Muriel Matters like as a person?
Oh, charming. She was Australian. She was very charming, very sweet. But she had the gift of a charming manner. I think she was quite a little tough underneath.
She came over from Australia to be active in the suffrage movement.
I suppose so. She joined the Freedom League.
Mm. What happened to her afterwards?
What happened to her?
What happened to her afterwards?
She married. And only about 2 years ago died.
Hmm?
In Sussex. I did an obituary notice of her.
Did you really? Where is that actually?
Hmm?
Where can I find that?
Well, it was in our newsletter. You know the Suffragette Fellowship?
Yes, you have a bulletin, don't you?
We have a newsletter, which has now fallen into more or less disuetude.
Has it?
This Enid Bach doesn't seem to have taken the trouble to get it out. I suppose the society is growing so small on account of the ordinary course of life.
Yes.
There can't be more than about, not more than about 20 survivors, I think.
Is that so? Yes. Yes. Anyway, that's awfully interesting. So anyway, we've got you into your first job as a typist. How did you get the job, actually?
I advertised in the Daily Telegraph that I wanted a job in an office that I could do shorthand and have my own typewriter. I could see it was the only way I could get up was to start in an office job, because that was the only place they let women in, or girls.
What sort of career did you think you were going to have at that time? I mean, did you think in terms of
machinery, I hoped.
You really wanted to?
Oh, yeah. And it was machinery. Straight away, I never did anything else.
And that had been so ever since a child, apart from law, which you couldn't do.
Yeah, which I couldn't do.
So then you moved on from typist. Where did you go next?
Then I became secretary to the vice president. And I was very young for the kind of responsibilities I had, because he went a great deal to America. And I used to do all his work when he was away. Gradually he found I could do a lot of it as well as he could, which was true. Also, some of it I could do actually better, because he was an American. He didn't know the ways of the English people or the English markets. I had a much better idea of what was required in England.
So you got your engineering training by going to America,
yes.
Did you? I see, yeah.
At the Sheridan Ironworks.
So it was basically an American company with an English branch sort of thing, was it?
It was, but it ceased to be a branch after I got into the door of it.
You took it over.
I owned it.
I see.
I owned it.
Did you buy your way in, Miss Lawson?
Yeah.
Or,
yes, on very favourable terms.
Did you? So you became really a successful...
So it wasn't. It's no good saying when I was 50 years with that company, because nobody could give me the sack. I suppose that's the answer.
Could I go back a bit in your upbringing? And you had a governess until you went to the high school, Sunderland High School, didn't you? What about your brothers and sisters? Did they all have?
By the way, that school was then called Milton House School.
Was it?
It ultimately developed into the high school for girls, Milton House School. My brothers went to public schools.
Did they? Which ones actually? Which schools?
Well, the eldest one went to Wellesley College.
Oh, yes.
And the other two went to the Northeastern County, which was at Barnard Castle.
Oh, yes.
I suppose that is regarded as a minor public school, but it is a public school.
And your sisters?
Sisters practically got no education at all. And nobody, no girls did in those days.
Did you feel resentful about that?
I did, because I knew I had to earn my own living. The family's fortunes was not at all as high at that time as they had been. My other sisters, I think, quite happy to stay at home. Although my sister next to me in age, older, did eventually, through my pressing, come out to work in business.
Did she? Mm. But they both got married.
That's a funny thing in our family. I told you my parents had 6 children, 3 sons and 3 daughters, 3 blondes and 3 brunettes. And out of that lot, they had 1 grandchild.
Good heavens, how extraordinary.
Wasn't that extraordinary?
Well, well.
And she has now passed on.
And your brothers married as well, did they?
Only one brother married in the whole family.
Is that so? Good heavens.
5 of our family were unmarried.
Goodness me. I didn't know that.
And I think the eldest one only married because he was more or less left on his own. He had to have a house and a home and a housekeeper.
Did you have a good governess?
Did we have a good governess?
Mm, at home?
No, not really good. She was ladylike.
I see, yes.
She was ladylike. She hadn't a very large outlook. She was much more interested, I think, in teaching us behaviour than...
So you had a ladylike upbringing?
Yeah.
What about at the high school, Milton House School? Did you have any good teachers there?
I didn't. Yeah.
And you really?
I was very much interested in the principal of the Milton House School, Mrs. Kennan, E.J. Kennan. I have a book the other day. I was looking at a prize which she gave me in her own handwriting. She was a very remarkable woman. And she did more for me to get me pushed on than any other individual teacher.
Did she really? Why did she take an interest in you, do you think?
She thought I was intelligent. And I think she wanted me to be a teacher. She wanted me to be a kindergarten teacher or something of that order.
But that didn't appeal to you?
I shouldn't have liked it, no.
Mm. So really you had quite a good education on the whole, if you add together
yes,
all your...
It's been mainly, I think, accidental, and also mainly through my own acquiring it.
Mm. Mm. You asked your parents if you could go to London, did you, and complete your education, or did they really send
Oh, they
you?
All came.
They all
we all moved to London at that time.
Did you really? I see.
Yes,
the
they
whole
didn't
family.
All come for my sake, but they came, we were moving.
I see. How old were you then?
16.
About 16.
16.
So your father was a solicitor in London after that, wasn't
he? No, he retired.
Oh, I see. Hmm. So where did you move in London, Miss Lawson, then?
We lived at Dulwich. And after that, I didn't live as long... before I was 21, I had a flat of my own. Now, that was something in those days.
Was it?
Oh, yes.
Why? I mean...
No single girls were allowed out, even. Hardly out. They'd love to have a flat and a latchkey. That really was very forward.
Why did you do it?
Well, I was very much involved in suffrage. I was gradually, and perhaps rather feebly, feeling my way in the company I was working for. And I didn't like long journeys back and forth. And I had one or two young men friends with whom I went down at intervals, when we found it an awful bore coming to go right back to Dulwich every night. And I wanted a place of my own. I wanted to be independent. Not that I didn't like and respect my family, which I did. My mother in particular.
Why did you respect your mother? What did you admire about her then?
Well, I think the mother of a family, if she's a good mother, she always, always does the right thing at the right time. She's always there in case of trouble or difficulty. Whoever else fails in the family, mother is there. And my mother stood up to that standard.
That's interesting. Was she a suffragist?
Suffragist.
Was she?
Suffragist. And a president of the local Women's Liberal Association.
She was active in the NUWSS.
But she was terrified of militancy.
Was she?
She was very fearful of my getting into prison.
So did you have arguments about militancy with her?
Not really, not much, but she made her feelings known to me about it.
And your father, did he support women's suffrage?
No, he didn't say very much either way, because he was liberal by mind. And I suppose he felt there was a certain amount of justification for what we were doing.
But you had no real friction with your family on the whole thing?
No. I had no trouble, really, about it at home, except that I always had the feeling that I mustn't do certain things for their sake. And that was a weak feeling to have. One shouldn't have had that feeling.
Well, I mean, you've got to balance off your loyalties, haven't you? It's very difficult to know how to balance it. I mean, why would it have harmed them if you'd gone into prison, do you think? What would have happened to them if you'd gone into prison?
Oh, well, it would have been... I would have been in disgrace. I would have not had any job, and I would have had to begin again. They thought it would have been awful. The last word of degradation.
I can see that it would be particularly difficult for you because you'd already started on
yes,
a career.
Yes, it was awfully difficult.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we didn't give enough consideration to that with the women doctors. The women doctors had just, the second generation of women doctors just got their feet firmly on the ground, and they had to be terribly careful of their behaviour and everything they did. They were watched, and everybody was prepared to criticise them and wipe them off the map, almost. So they had to be awfully careful. And I think they were right, that they did better for the cause by staying in the medical profession and working their way up in it, rather than by going to prison.
I'm sure that's right, actually. The same would apply to you, wouldn't it?
In a way, rather remotely. But the out-and-out, 100% militant won't admit that. At all. They don't admit any consideration as justifying you to keep out of prison. There, by the way, is a certificate signed by Mrs. Pankhurst for one of her hunger strikers.
Oh, yes.
That's
have a look at
paper
that.
In the bookcase.
I'll look at it
before you go out.
Yes. I mean, do tell me if you're getting tired. It's 4:30 now, so I've been here for an hour. I mean, I don't want to...
That's right. You won't overtire me. I don't think you are.
I mean, do stop me, you know, if you want me. But it was a marvellous tea, by the way. Thank you very much indeed. Can I get you some more cake?
You can,
no,
for yourself.
No, I won't have any more.
No, not for me, thanks.
So, anyway, we've now got you to London in your flat. Where was your flat, actually, as a matter of interest?
Ah, my first flat was in Guildford Street.
Oh, yes.
In Bloomsbury.
Oh, I know.
Which was not quite so bad as it is now. Which was even then fairly not respectable. When you were asking anything from the shops to be sent, you had to whisper your address. It was not a respectable place. But the house I was in was all right. And then I moved to better quarters when my means permitted. And I had two very good flats in Gordon Square. On the last one was over where the Greek legation used to be. And one of my co-tenants there was Arthur Whaley.
Oh yes, a Chinese.
He was a very interesting person.
Was he? And then you moved here, did you? After that?
No, I moved then. I lived 6 years with my two doctor friends at North Gate, Regent's Park.
And then you moved here?
Well, during the war, I had a kind of foothold up at the place called Clive Court up in the Maidebane.
Oh, yes, yes.
But I had so many odd jobs that I did in the war that I was very rarely in my flat at night. We managed finally, you know, to force our way into the Home Guard.
I must ask you about that later.
We had to use almost militant
method. I must ask you about that. Anyway, what was your first connection with the suffrage movement, apart from your mother's involvement?
Oh, it was just joining the central branch of the WSPU.
I see. That you didn't ever join the...
I just joined up after meeting.
You didn't ever join the NUWSS then, the Mrs. Fawcett's organisation?
No, no.
You went straight
into... No, I came straight into the militants.
Did you really? Mm-hmm. Why did you do that?
I went to a meeting and listened. And I suppose I went to perhaps more than one meeting. And I heard Christabel and all the speakers and I decided they were on the right track. And I decided to join.
You never considered joining your mother's organisation?
No. Although I was more or less liberal in those days. Mm. Now what are we? We don't know.
Anyway, so you joined the WSPU, and were you then...
I was with the WSPU until this meeting when
until
it was dissolved.
Mm.
And then I was... All the rest of the time the Freedom League was going, I was on their executive committee, and that took up a lot of time. And of course we did a lot of work. All of, well, running the paper was a full-time job, really. We did it in the evenings. Mm. I did it after office hours. I had another office at Holborn Bars. I used to go down from my own office, having had a jolly good meal first, and start in on the paper. And we did that night after night.
When you say we...
Well, I had one or two people who helped me. And I had a friend, Miss Ridlaw, who was... she became secretary of the... We called it the Minerva Publishing Company Limited, because we wanted to keep the Freedom League's funds clear of it, you see. Just as Pethick Lawrence used to do the paper for the WSPU.
So, did you have any office in the WSPU before the split? I mean,
no.
You were just an ordinary member?
I was just an ordinary member of the central branch. I had an office with the Freedom League, and I was on their committee for many years.
Did you, when the split happened, were you immediately made editor? No, you weren't made editor at once, because they didn't have the vote then, did they? What did you become? Were you on the committee when...
At the first conference we had after the split, I was elected onto the National Executive Committee, and thereafter, from year to year.
Till the 1961?
Yeah. And of course, as the two societies developed side by side, one could see that Mrs. Pankhurst was right in regard to the results, I think. That her methods were the ones that got results in that particular field. Because, as she herself used to point out, if you're at war, you don't get an army headed by a general and then have the general hold committee meetings with the privates on the field of battle to see what they'll do next. There's something in that, you know, because a militant movement is different from an ordinary society. Anyway, they made such great headway. They became very much more important in the militant movement than the Freedom League. They made so much more headway that I think the methods must have been right for that particular purpose. But I didn't agree with it on principle.
So you were on the committee, and then were you almost immediately made editor of the Vote, or what positions did you hold?
Oh, it was some years, two or three years later, I think.
Yes.
Mm. I wasn't the editor, I was the managing director.
Oh, yeah, of the company.
Yeah.
I see, yes. So your business experience was very useful, I mean.
But we got a... Yes, it was very useful, especially in connection with printing presses. I knew a great deal about it. And printers generally. And we had an editor who was on the Times, on the staff of the Times, who did it as a spare time job.
That was Mary Kennedy.
May Kennedy.
Yes. Do tell me a bit about her.
Well, she's dead years ago. Mm. She was Irish. She came from Trinity College, Dublin, I think. Her brother was the Attorney General of the first free government in Ireland after the Sinn Féin had their battles. And Mary Kennedy came to London as a journalist, and she was awfully clever, but she was very, very, very eccentric, and she would never adapt herself to the company she was in at all. She was all her spikes were out, if you know what I mean by that. Mm. And she told me when she first came down, she got this job on the Times. She was the only woman on the Times. And she says, evidently the editor or the sub-editor or someone didn't like the idea of having her. And the first job he gave her was to go down to the Empire Theatre to review a new show. And when she got there, she'd never been in a London theatre before. She was just a fresh young lady from Dublin, and certainly not a theatre of the kind where there was a promenade. You know what the Empire Theatre is supposed to have been like.
Yes.
And do you want something from me, Mary?
No, that's all right.
Well, she went down, and she'd never been in such a place before, and she'd no idea the sort of thing that went on. And she went during interval. She saw the people walking up and down on the promenade, you know, so she went to join. And then she attached, she got into conversation with one of the ladies, and finally she stayed with her all the time. Finally, the woman turned and says, oh, she says, go away, get off my tail. She says, you're spoiling my business. That was her first job for the Times.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was very unkind of them to send her there.
When you say she had all her spikes out, what did she believe
in? Oh, she'd
in,
argue in anything, Irish.
I see, sort of rather fiery personality.
Absolutely. And would never modify her speech to adapt herself to the company she was in at all. But she had a very rather checkered sort of life, really, because of she quarrelled with everybody, and then she finally had a flat in a house in Park Road leading down from Regent's Park to Baker Street.
Mm.
And she had a very sad end there, really, because during the bombing, which was rather severe, especially there, she used to go to one or two places where they had better shelters. And she went to this, she quarreled with them nearly all, but had to leave. Finally, she stayed at home, and she had some sort of seizure during an air raid. There was no bomb, she wasn't hit by a bomb or anything, but she had some sort of seizure, and she was alone, there was no one else in the house at all. And she just lay there. After about 2 days, the Daily Telegraph, the people for whom she worked, the Telegraph, sent a young man up from the office to see what had happened to her. And she told me, she said, after a long, long session, she said, I remotely heard a bell ringing. And it was the boy ringing the bell. And she said, I dragged myself to the front door. And this young man was evidently a very competent, because he took entire charge of the situation. He had her removed to hospital immediately. He locked up the place and took the keys away to safety. And she was left in the hospital. And she recovered enough to come out, but she never recovered her mental control.
She still remained a journalist all her life, did she?
She died. She went to back to Ireland, and she died there. But when she was in Ireland, she was entirely gone in her head. She used to get into buses, you know, and say, I want a Strepney Fair to Piccadilly Circus, yes, you know, things like that.
Was she good as editor, do you think?
She was brilliant in some ways. I think she was brilliant in some ways, but she was her own worst enemy, if you know what I mean by that. She was always quarrelling with people.
When you say she was brilliant, what were her good qualities?
At repartee. She was really brilliant at repartee, and she was very good at writing. I don't know whether I would say brilliant at writing, but very good.
Did she have a flair for selecting things to write about, you know, I mean...
She seemed to have, yes. She seemed to have, and she had a tremendous wit.
Yes, because another person who wrote a lot for The Vote was Marion Holmes, wasn't she? Could you tell me a bit about her?
Yes, well, she was on our committee too, and she was for a time a joint editor of The Vote. She was married to a chemist who had a pharmacy at Croydon. She was a quite intelligent woman. A rather meagre background of education, I think, but intelligent and very interested in politics and in the suffrage. Good speaker, but I didn't know her very well. I didn't know her very well. Except meeting her at committee meetings.
She had a series of very good biographies of suffragettes or suffragists or people in the Women's
Freedom
League.
Yes, in the past.
Yes.
Were they in The Vote?
Yes, those little articles about personalities. Yeah, and they're very useful indeed, actually. I wonder if you remember having those in The Vote. Articles about major personalities.
Yes, we do. I do remember. I remember Miss Ridler did a very good one about Mary Wollstonecraft.
Did she?
With a portrait.
Yes, yes. We
had some very good contributors. I found I have very much interest in that. There was Lawrence Houseman.
Well, yes, now he's a strange character, isn't he? I've read his autobiography. Strange man, really.
Well, he's what he is. He's a homosexual. Was a homosexual. And I think homosexuals, although often extremely charming, are generally eccentric. Rather, I think he had the characteristics of the homosexual. I used to see him quite a bit. And then we had Israel Zangor. He was good.
Oh, yes.
He was very good.
Yes.
And we had Beatrice Harraden.
Yeah, she was a novelist, wasn't she?
Yeah. And we had quite a lot of well-known people used to write for her.
When you say you had this office, what did you say, where was it in High Holborn?
Holborn Bars.
Holborn Bars, yes.
Just on the corner of Gray's Inn Road, as you turned into Holborn.
What did you do there? I mean...
Well, we fitted it up as an office and ran a business. We had an editor who came and went. We had a shorthand typist who was there all the time. We had a sort of office boy who did errands and pinched the petty cash. And we had just several voluntary workers.
How many rooms did you have in the
Two.
Offices? Two rooms in the offices, yes. One of them was your room.
One was a general office and one was a private office.
So did you have anyone with you in your room? Did you have anyone with you in your room or was it just for you?
Oh no, it wasn't just for me. The editor worked in it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you had the sort of managerial people in one room.
That's it. We had one
room.
Private room and one.
So what was there in these rooms? I mean...
Office furniture.
Just office furniture?
Office furniture, that's all.
So anyway, you sort of, I mean, what was
the... I was well used to ringing up an office. I could get that going. I knew what we wanted.
So what was the relationship, Miss Lawson, between you and the editor? Did you tell the editor what to do, or what?
We used to have two conferences a week. I had to tell her what to do, because whenever she did anything on her own that wasn't in accordance with our policy, I used to get dreadful complaints from the branches of the Freedom League, complaining, you know, this, that and the other wasn't in accordance with our policy. So she accepted that. She saw that she didn't know anything about what the society required, and therefore she took advice from me on that. And I really gave most of the hints about whom we would have in, about the makeup, titles.
The technical side of things as well, I suppose. Yes, yes, yes. But and how long were you editor? You say about 3 years or so, was it?
I can't remember exactly.
Not editor, I mean in managing the Minerva Company.
About 2.5 years, I think. It was, I left it in full speed, you know.
But was that when you went to America?
Yeah.
That was why you gave it up, was it?
Yes.
How long?
I left it as a going concern.
Mm. How long were you in America, Miss Lawson, then?
Oh, well, I was in America off and on a long time, because every year for about 40 years I used to go for whatever I could, except in wartime, and stay perhaps 3 months.
Did you? Yeah.
So I had constant refresher visits.
Yes. But you had to, did you actually have to give up the Freedom League then when you went to America the first time?
No.
I mean, you abandoned being...
No, I had to get leave of absence from the committee meetings, that was all.
But you...
I never gave it up. Until the vote was won.
But you gave up being director of the Minerva Company, didn't
yes.
you? After 2.5 years.
Yes.
So, just because it was so awkward, I suppose.
Well, I had to go about my own business.
Mm.
And the great thing they'd wanted from me was to get it started.
Yes.
Was to get the thing off the ground.
Yes, yes.
You because had... it wasn't easy and the money was very scarce.
You had photographs in it as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was one of the interesting things about it. It's quite a interesting periodical, actually.
Well, I haven't got it. I had my copies were bound in green cases.
I know where they are. They're in the Fawcett Library, aren't they?
There are some there, I think.
With green binding.
I wish they would give them back to me. Because I... Foot's wife. What's her name?
Oh, I know. Corinna something, isn't it? Or...
I've forgotten her name for the moment. She was going to write a film on the militant suffrage. She was going to get a film produced. And she begged us all to give everything we could in the way of information so that she could read up on it. And I lent her these books. I asked her to take care of them. I've never seen them since. It's many years ago.
I've read through the whole of the vote, actually, from the beginning to the end, but I've used the Fawcett Library copies.
I suppose you've read all these recent books that have come out.
Yes, I've read most of them, I think, yes, yes. But anyway, that's most interesting, because that gives me an inside story of how the paper was done, you know.
Yeah. What made it tick?
Absolutely. What about the committee meetings? Because you presumably went to those as well, didn't you? The executive committee.
Yes, I was there.
What were they like?
I had 12 members. 12 members. And 3 honorary officers.
They were
very interesting and very well done, because you see, both Hal Martin and Billington Greig, who were the officers, had a very good knowledge of the running of societies. They were done in a business-like way, and people weren't allowed to wander on and talk a lot of gossip. They had to keep to the point. I wish we had the same in the Suffragette Fellowship. It's been awful. Awful. It shocks me.
But what was Mrs. Despard like as a chairwoman, really?
Well, I had such a unique respect for Mrs. Despard that I thought she was wonderful in every connection. I shouldn't have thought she was that it was her best thought to be chairman.
I
think she gave way to her feelings more than a chairman would ordinarily do, or should ordinarily do. I think, in that respect. Of course, we used to have lots of fun when she lived down at Isha, Earnshaw Cottage, Isha, and she used to ask us down, those of us whom she thought poor young things, starving, come, let them come down for the weekend and have a good time. And we used to go down and spend weekends with her there. She was a vegetarian, and we were not. But we used to be for her sake. And we used to have wonderful meals, as we thought. But within about a couple of hours, we were as hungry as hunters. And occasionally, we used to ride off on our bicycles down to the village to get a meal. But there were a lot of vegetarians and food people in there, food reformers in the suffrage movement.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. We attract people of peculiar views. I remember going down with Lord Russell once to Bromley to a meeting. He was the principal speaker, I suppose, and I was the runner-up, you know. And he lived in Russell Square, and so I lived in Guildford Street, so he says, I'll pick you up, I'll take you. And, you know, after the meeting, the people who promoted it generally asked us to supper. And they did, and they gave us vegetarian dishes when they were vegetarians. But these people were not only vegetarians, they were raw vegetarians.
Vegan.
Raw vegetarians. And I'm sure, coming back in Lord Russell's car, you could hear us both rattling with our raw carrots. And stuff. We never could quite get used to raw vegetables.
Another group that are very active in the suffrage movement is artists, of course, and writers. Why do you think that is? If you agree with me, you may not.
I didn't realise that they were particularly for suffrage.
I mean, you've mentioned Zangwill, Beatrice Harradon, Lawrence Housman.
Well, they had a... We had an artist society, you know, and we had a writer society.
Mm. Mm.
They all had their banners and all.
Mm. I just wonder why it should be that artists and writers should be so...
But were they any more than others?
Well, that's really what I was asking you. If you haven't got that impression,
I never
thought
that they were.
Mm.
I have a portrait here of one of the people who were who promoted the she really was quite exceptional.
Cicely Hamilton, you
know.
What tell me about her, because I haven't come across her very much.
Well, first of all, I don't quite know how to express this, but nothing could change her principles and her views. She absolutely strictly for them. She never allowed herself to be go to the right or the left. She never allowed any personal consideration of convenience or money or anything else to influence her. I found her to be absolutely single-minded. Mm. And she was, I think, quite brilliantly clever. She was, unfortunately, missed a lot of the gains she should have made from her writings. And the only play that really, well, the one of the two plays of hers that were really well received was one called Diana of Dobson's. Dobson's was a store, and Diana was one of the sales girls, and they all lived in, as they used to do in those days. And she showed this, she gave this play to Lena Ashworth, the actress, to read with a view to perhaps producing it. And Lena Ashworth was quite taken with it, and she decided to produce it. But before she put it on, she gave Cicely £50 and said, that's for all right.
Water out, sort of thing.
And you're out.
Mm.
And we must do what we can with it. And of course it became a howling success. And Cicely should have made a lot of money.
I understand, yeah.
There was nothing more, and I don't think Lena Ashwell ever came back to her and said, well, Cicely, you ought to share in this.
Because Lena Ashwell was in the movement as well, wasn't she? She was a suffragette too.
Yeah, she was.
Mm.
She was.
I ought to have asked you earlier, Miss Lawson, you started off in the WSPU then. What did you do in the WSPU while you were a member of it?
Oh, all the sort of things that we were all doing. We did meetings. We spoke more or less badly at indoor and outdoor meetings. At outdoor meetings we got the crowd by being the first speakers to come around, you know. And we chalked pavements with advertisements of the meetings. We gave away handbills. We walked up and down the gutters with sandwich boards, back and front. And we got thrown out of meetings with more or less violence through questioning the speakers. What about votes for women? What will your party do for votes for women? And so on. Well, those are a few of the things. Mm. But the everyday things you did, they varied from day to day.
You weren't actually an official or holding any special position.
No. Mm. I was just joining in the demonstrations, going to Whitehall to rush the House of Commons, and going in all those crowds and taking one's chance, but not courting arrest. Sometimes it was awfully difficult to get arrested.
I know the police didn't really want
they didn't
you
want
to. Why didn't they?
Because they knew they would be forcibly fed and the House of Commons would get stirred up about it. They had become, they'd got a certain amount of sympathy by that time, and people were making a hell of a racket about all that forcible feeding.
Why, Miss Lawson, did you in fact go with the Women's Freedom League rather than staying with the Pankhursts?
Purely because of that democratic membership. Purely because I thought that the right thing to do was to stay with the Constitution and have the branches take part in the moulding of the society. If they'd done that, there would have been no question of expelling people like the Pethick Lawrences or anything. That sort of thing couldn't have been done in a society which was properly run. I thought it was dreadful the way they turned the Pethick Lawrences out.
Which branch did you actually belong to?
Central London branch.
I see, yes.
We met at Essex Hall, which is now no longer. It's now defunct.
So anyway, you then joined the Women's Freedom League, or at least it didn't really happen like that, did it? The Women's Freedom League became independent, but wasn't really originally seen
no,
as...
No, yes, that's it. We got to a dividing point and went our separate ways. All starting from the same point.
Could I ask you a bit about Teresa Billington? I mean, we started off by discussing her, and I must go in a moment, but I'd love to ask you a bit more about her. Can you tell me anything more about her? Was she easy to work with, for instance, would you say?
I should have thought so, yeah. I should have thought so. I know that our Honorary Secretary, Mrs. Hamilton, got on splendidly with her.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yes. The thing is, you see, she did leave you, didn't she, in 1911 or thereabouts?
They were great friends. Teresa didn't go to prison again herself, though, you know, after the first time. And she was organising people, militant protests, with the idea of their going to prison. Of course, anyone who organises a militant protest ought to be willing to go themselves, I think.
I agree. But she didn't want to go again.
No, and then she got married and that. But nothing could detract from her wonderful contribution to the militant suffrage movement or from the ability with which she handled herself. She certainly was a very strong personality in it.
Did you read her book, The Militant Suffrage Movement?
I think I did, many years ago. What? It had a paper cover, hadn't it?
I'm not sure about that.
A Greek paper cover.
Yes. Did you agree with it?
I can't remember it. I've read so many books about the
movement. Because it really was quite a distinct...
And so many of them so many years ago.
Yes, of course.
Was it a good... Would you like a cigarette?
No, I won't, thank you. Do have one yourself.